Life is a journey. What's your story? Well, the inquisitive tongue is here today with the sommelier of downtown St. Pete, my friend Jackie Aish Afsevici. Welcome, Jackie.
Thank you for having me.
You know, you have, we've talked about so many things. I mean, you've been all over the world tasting wines. You have demonstrated your ability to take a cork off with a sword from champagne. You've taught me so much about wine, but you're very humble. And tell me about your journey to become a sommelier.
Well, you're very kind, first of all. And I kind of have gone to the School of Hard Knocks. There's a lot of avenues that you can take to get to where I've gotten today. I wasn't fortunate enough to attend one of those outstanding institutions of education like the CIA, Culinary Institute of America, for those of you who think I might be in a different line of work. But so I've been in the hospitality industry since I was 18 years old. The day I graduated high school, my father was kind enough to find me a job in a restaurant, and kind of stuck in my blood ever since. So I've really come up through. I was a bartender for many years, developed an interest in wine, and then at one point realized that this was my career, and I was going to have to start putting myself in a position that was going to better myself in the industry. So grudgingly took management jobs, but they were helpful to me. Ended up owning my own restaurant for a few years, and then worked towards, my wine education and my somm, just tasting, traveling, and, seminars and education, and that's how I got here.
So, Wine Spectator, many awards at previous restaurants, and then also at Ceviche, where you are, your title is?
I am the sommelier and beverage director at Ceviche.
So let's start with pairing wine with food, and you've got some unique ideas and non-traditional ones. So share with our audience, for the inquisitive tongue, the whole notion of pairing wine and food. Mother's Day is coming up, Father's Day is coming up, Memorial Day is coming up. What do we drink? How do we pair?
Well, for me, it's all about balance. And I think anyone that really kind of digs into pairing understands that. You know, the old traditions of white wine with white meat and, red wine with red meat, they don't necessarily, we can play around with that a little bit. Basically, you want to balance the weight of the dish to the weight of the wine. So, for example, if you have a nice piece of white fish, but you want to put maybe a creamy sauce with it, maybe some herbs, now you're talking about a dish that can handle a wine with a little bit more depth, a little bit more of a broader palate.
What do you drink with barbecue?
I think Zinfandel is fabulous with barbecue because the smoky notes in barbecue, especially if you're talking about grilled lamb. But then again, if you got some spice, then you're talking about maybe something like a Riesling, like a medium or off-dry Riesling, because the sugar in that wine is going to kind of calm down some of that heat. It's great with Asian food. So, again, you're talking about balancing flavors and balancing weight.
So this whole notion that you have to drink wine, red wine from a certain glass and sparkling wine and a flute, that's kind of gone out the door too, right?
Well, maybe it shouldn't have, though, because there is some truth to some of that. There's a glass company out there that's been around for many years. I don't want to mention it, but those of us in the industry know what it is. And they've done a ton of research on how the shape of the glass delivers the wine to the palate. And depending on where that wine hits your palate first, depends upon the flavor of the wine and also the bowl, the bouquet of the wine. We all know the aroma of the wine is very important. So there is something to that.
Should white wine be served chilled?
You know, that's a preference thing. White wine in general, we say around 42 degrees. Champagne, a little cooler than that. I find it's a cultural thing as well. I know tableside, if I have a guest that I know is from overseas, many times, you put a Burgundy on the table and they just want it on the table. Even in Florida when it's super hot, it does, when you over chill a wine, you do tend to kill some of the aromatics in that wine. So, yeah, there is something to be said for, letting that wine open up a little bit more, even if it is a white. And conversely, reds should be kept a little cooler. Room temperature is a term that's been thrown around for years, but room temperature, depending on where you are, if you're in Florida, room temperature could be 95 degrees.
Oh, yes.
Nobody wants a 95-degree glass of red wine.
Well, let's do an international tour of what's trending. Let's start because Ceviche is truly one of the most delicious tapas and Spanish restaurants. What's trending in Spanish and Portuguese wines?
Well, I mean, you're talking about, you know, obviously Spain and Portugal are the same contiguous landmass. And they've kind of, over the years, the borders have gone back and forth. So they've been doing this. They've been making wine for a really long time. One of the things that I really like about Spain and Portugal is they're really, really loyal to their indigenous grapes. Not to say that they don't bring in other grapes from around the world, but, you know, Spain Tempranillo is king. You know, you're just not going to find anything that's going to rival Tempranillo in Spain. And then you also have Mencia, which is a lighter red. And, you know, you've got, coming from Rías Baixas, you've got Albariño, which is that beautiful, crisp, kind of salinity-driven white with, you know, some tree fruits. But they're really, really, and then, of course, you get to the southern part of Spain, and then we're talking about sherry. And so that's a trend that I don't think is ever going to change in Spain and Portugal, and I'm glad of it because there's such beauty in those wines.
So with Mother's Day approaching and all of the holidays, graduation, all the special occasions that are going to be going on in May, what are you recommending in sparkling and what's trending? Because, yes, I love my French Veuve Clicquot, but I also love my Napa. What's trending that we don't know about in sparkling?
Well, Nana, you know me so well. I do love bubbles. I am a bubbles girl. And, you know, when we talk about California sparkling specifically, I think we all know the big houses, the Schramsberg and the Domaine Carneros. But something that I have noticed in some of the seminars that I've done and the wine camps that I've attended is production of sparkling wine is becoming within these wineries' grasps. Even if they're smaller wineries, they're producing the sparkling wine because there's a lot of off-site storage availability. There's a lot of remote bottling lines. So you're starting to see a lot of Napa and Sonoma wineries that are making sparkling. And even Oregon. You know, I was at Oregon Pinot Camp a couple of years ago, and I was really surprised at how many of those houses were showing sparkling wines. It's a lot of fun.
Let's talk about Oregon and Washington. You know, Argentina has had its day. Chile has had its day. Napa and Sonoma, you know, Paso Robles. Oregon and Washington continues to just surprise me. Talk a little bit about what's coming out of those regions.
Well, you know, whatever we think about climate change, whatever's causing it, and I have no desire to get into a political discussion, the climate is changing. It's always changing. It's been changing since, you know, the Earth was created. So what you're finding is a lot of those varietals that maybe are not so easily grown in Napa specifically because it is getting warmer, they're being pushed up into Oregon. So you're seeing a lot of, and you have for years, the Burgundy varietals, the Pinot Noirs, and the Chardonnays that need that little bit of you know, a cooler region to thrive. And then, of course, Washington, they're just doing those beautiful reds. Their Merlot is fantastic. They're doing some gorgeous Bordeaux blends. I mean, they're just some really, really beautiful wines coming out of those regions.
Australia and New Zealand, still hot in the trend wine area? And if so, what do you recommend by name?
Well, you can't beat New Zealand for Sauvignon Blanc. I mean, of course, I love Loire, but Sauvignon Blanc is king, right? And so one that I'm pouring right now that I absolutely love is our Dog Point Sauvignon Blanc. It's fantastic. It's got that, you know, Sauvignon Blanc has that herbal note that everybody's familiar with, but it's not the smack in your face, real deep grapefruit. It does have some beautiful basil tones and passion fruit, but it's just a gorgeous wine, especially in the summer in Florida when it's so darn hot. And then I'm going to blow your mind on Australia. I love the Rieslings coming out of Australia. I think they're fantastic.
So there are regions, New York State, Finger Lakes, mm-hmm. Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Illuminate us about what's going on in the States that's not California.
It's everywhere. I mean, you mentioned the Finger Lakes, and really what people don't realize is when you get up into that New York area, there's vineyards everywhere. And this is where, you know, wine will make you a historian because, you know, that's where the original settlers were. And they got here and they realized very quickly that the specific variety of grape that grew here was really only a table grape. So they started bringing cuttings and they started planting vineyards. And to your point, the Finger Lake Rieslings are fantastic. But I tell you right now, some of the powerhouses, Texas is really coming on strong.
Texas. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
You know, you're kind of throwing, I mentioned it, and yet I don't have a ton of information on specific wineries, but there's a lot of Texas wineries out there that are, they're really coming into their own, and you're even seeing Mexico, which makes sense because it's right next to California. But interestingly enough, some of the wines that are coming out of Mexico, one of the grapes that I can't wait to try it is Nebbiolo. Because when you think of Nebbiolo, you think of Piemonte, you think of northern Italy, which is, you know, cool and mountainous, and, you know, Mexico is warm, and so, but they're supposed to be fantastic, and I want to get my hands on some of them.
I've actually been to the Baja area. You have to go inland, up and around, down and around, and there is just this little valley where they're growing the most amazing grapes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's time to talk France. We love France.
We do love France.
What is, and then we're going to talk affordable, but what is coming out of France? What do you if you're going to buy something for mom for graduation to serve at a party, give us a Loire, give us a Sancerre, talk to me.
Well, you know, France is, let's face it, the French are pretty dialed in. And we know the Bordeaux and the Rhones and the Champagnes, but really just for fun and interesting and bang for your buck, you just go to southern France, kind of down there. It's kind of the Wild West down there in those regions, and you're getting some really fun red blends that aren't necessarily, you know, Bordeaux varietals. France is all about, there's so much regulation. They started it, right? You know, so when you get into those regions in France where they're just making wine and no one's, you know, handcuffing them and telling, no, you have to grow this grape and it has to be this, you know, in this bottle, because, you know, they regulate the bottle that the wine goes in. So I would say kind of look to southern France and, of course, Provence, because we all love rosés. And, you know, rosés, I feel like, are perfect for Mother's Day. And you can find some really nice ones that, you know, I'm always looking for a good deal. You know, I never get upset when people come in and they start looking at that right-hand column, because, you know, not every night is a $500 a bottle wine night. So very, very approachable on that, and I appreciate a deal just like anyone else.
And you're off to Italy again. Tell us some of your favorite Italian areas for wine.
All of them? Was that fair to say? You know, it's just something so beautiful, speaking of France and Italy, too. You know, they talk about a country that's really loyal to their indigenous grapes, although when you start talking about the Super Tuscans, yes, they are bringing in the Bordeaux varietals.
The Barolos.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, Barolo, speaking of, that's in Piemonte, which is, you know, where we usually end up. And, of course, you have the Nebbiolos. And then I like Barbera, which I just, it's a little rounder on the palate, still coming from the Piemonte area. But, you know, it's just like you have a friend that goes to Italy and they come back and they're like, oh, my gosh, I had this wine. It was fantastic. Can you? I'm like, no. Before they even finish that, I'm like, I cannot, whatever you had, I cannot get it for you. You're in some beautiful countryside and sit in a villa and you're sitting on it and you have this incredible, no, I can't do any of that. But I can find you a nice Italian wine.
You can, you know, you taste with your eyes. Mm-hmm. And the ambiance, the experience, the scent. Under $10 wines for just everyday drinking.
Under $10 wines. So there's one wine out there that I really, really love, speaking of Portugal, and it's a perfect, perfect summertime wine. It's Portuguese Vinho Verde. Directly translated means green wine. It's a young wine. If you go to Portugal, speaking of places that you drink wine that you're never going to find, you go in the countryside in Portugal and you go into a small cafe and there's literally a tap in the side of the wall, and they open this tap and they pour you a glass of the most wonderful, crisp, slightly effervescent Vinho Verde. And it's a real clear wine. It's got a little, you know, some little flecks of green in it. It's beautiful with seafood. It's beautiful just to, you know, sit al fresco and have some olives and some roasted nuts. And that bottle you can pick up well under $10 in a store. And that's my pick for a Florida summertime wine.
So is frosé a dirty word? The rosé that's frozen and slushed up, is that just to a sommelier?
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about, Nanette.
Oh, all the listen, I think we're not 21, but so there you go. It's a dirty word. So this is what I have to say. If you need to know anything about wine, if you really want approachable information, please count on Jackie Aish. She's over at Savishi. She's not there every day, but when she's there, she can take you on an international tour through the taste, show you unusual pairings, and you're sure to, when you get home, understand wine and enjoy it better. Jackie, any last words?
No, I do. We're speaking of frosé, which not necessarily a dirty word, but there's a word out there that we do like. Gentlemen, think about brosé. It's okay. You can drink it too. It's pink, but it's all right. Try some brosé with your buddies. It's okay.
And from Jackie Aish, who is going to Italy this summer, whose dog is one of my favorite dogs, is always driving something cool and retro and fun. Thank you for being the sommelier that we go to in St. Pete.
Well, thank you for having me.